Welcome back, podcast fans. I'm your host, Annette Hines, and this is Parenting Impossible, the Special Needs Survival Podcast. This week, I have yet another amazing guest, and the theme is, once again, advocacy. What a shock. But it's really, we're talking about the same type of advocacy that so many of us face in our lives. It's this David and Goliath fight that we have, so many of us, been in. And if you haven't had to face this, bless you. And I'm so glad for you. And I hope you never have to deal with this, whether you are a caregiver, whether you are a disabled person supporting yourself, whether you are an ally in our community or professional, and you know, really no offense to the professionals in our community, but many of us who are caregivers, many of us who are supported individuals in the community, we often feel like David. We often feel like the underdog. And because I have been in this fight so much the last couple of years, and because I've had such interesting podcast guests and such interesting cases, such heartbreaking cases, actually, recently in the law firm as well, I picked up Malcolm Gladwell's book to reread it and refresh myself. His book, David and Goliath, a national bestseller, like all of his books. And, you know, one of the things about Malcolm Gladwell's book, David and Goliath, is that he's not just reminding us of the old rehashed David and Goliath story, but he's talking about how we need to reframe the way we look at our battles. He wants us to look at David differently and look at Goliath differently, and the way that we approach these battles in life. And that's why I'm bringing you these stories of advocates, not because they're these wonderful, feel-good, one-off types of stories, but because these are things that you can do in your own life. They're 100% tactics and strategies that you can apply to you. It's not a once in a million victory. It's not, oh, well, you know, she was able to do that because XYZ. Today's guest is no different. So I want to introduce you to Raja Marhaba, and she was extraordinary in so many ways in her battle for her children, just like so many of my recent podcast guests were. And in my own life, I have been extraordinary in my battles as well. But I have met hundreds, and I want to say like more than 1,000 extraordinary individuals, whether they be self-advocates or caregivers or allies in the community, thousands of extraordinary individuals. How do we all get to be extraordinary? You know, it's because, not because of outside factors, there are common threads following through that everyone can learn from and can apply in their own lives and in your own way. So you're going to want to listen to Raja's story, and some people are going to get fixated on the fact that she spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on lawyers. Don't get stuck on that fact. You don't necessarily need to have done that in order to have a victory. Her victory was because of persistence. So let me take a step back and say that for many of you, it's the beginning of August, and as this podcast is airing, and you'll be getting ready for, you know, what I think of as the busy season for many people in the disability community. Whether you are facing the start of a school year, which can be anywhere from mid-August to early September, depending on where you are in the country. But also if you are in the adult service community, things kind of go to sleep over the summer because of vacations for agency people and government people. You can't get anything done. You can't get a meeting. You can't get a conversation going. So business kind of slows to almost a halt. And then all of a sudden, everybody's back and meetings begin again. And it's almost like a frenzy of a fresh start. So September and October get busy and you're able to address things that have been going on. And so even in the adult service community, September and October are busy. I have so many meetings scheduled at that time to address issues that have been going on. Some for many, many months, and I'm finally able to get a meeting. I'm finally able to get a court date. I'm finally able to get a mediation. I'm finally able to get XYZ, you name it. So busy season, time to get ready. You know, let's get revved up. Let's get, you know, all of our skills brushed off and, you know, let's get prepared. So that's why I'm bringing you these podcasts, and I want you to get prepared. And I want to refresh you about the David and Goliath story. It's not just that, oh, you know, David got lucky and he, you know, was brave and he, you know, ran up and hit Goliath with a rock. He was smart. He refused to do battle in the traditional way. He recognized that he was going to take a different approach. He was going to use the skills he had. And those skills were going to serve him well. And he was paying attention to, you know, the in that he had, to the flaws that Goliath had. And he took Goliath by surprise because Goliath was expecting one thing and David brought him another. So anyway, let me tell you about Raja. She, like so many of us, didn't expect this, trusted her system, and was surprised that she was in the fight of her life for both of her sons. Her district took her, a middle-class mom, all the way to Ninth Circuit Federal Court. And they did that in an effort to intimidate her, to drain her of financial resources, and also that she would give up. A story we all know only too well. But she just refused to stop. She sacrificed pretty much everything in the long run. You'll hear her story. It killed her marriage. It pretty much almost killed her business. She had no life, all in the pursuit of what was her children's rights. She had to basically do all of this to bring the school district to their knees to provide something that her children were entitled to anyway. This is heartbreaking and criminal, except it's not criminal, but it is. So the district hired high-priced attorneys in order to prevent providing what her sons were entitled to, which was free and appropriate public education under IDEA. She knew in her heart that these services were going to provide the essential building blocks that they needed for success in life. And She wrote a book about her story called Unstoppable. It's great. It reminded me a lot of the David and Goliath book and the David and Goliath story. And not only is it about her story, but there's a lot of really great information out in that book about how to be your best advocate. And it can be a good reference guide for you. And she wants it to change the conversation about our broken special education system. Raja won the Diane Lipton Award in 2021 for outstanding advocacy. And I'm so excited for her. That's amazing. And she believes that knowledge is power, especially when it comes to disseminating information to families. And parents are the biggest advocates for their children. She has a foundation, and through that foundation provides a lot of support for other families. She's paying it forward. She's fearless in her advocacy, and she commands respect, as you can imagine, from the educational community, who routinely continue to deny services and, you know, especially in vulnerable populations. So she has won so many awards and accolades in her community and continues to be a just an astonishing, fierce advocate in the community for many, many families. While she charges for her services and does a lot of coaching and support, she is very generous with her time and knowledge, all learned through hard knocks.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, everybody. Have you been searching for a law firm that understands the unique challenges of your family? We can help. My name is Annette Hines, and I'm a mom and an attorney. And I'm also an advocate. And I started Special Needs Law Group because when my family was young, I struggled to find all the services and support that my family needed. We can help here at Special Needs Law Group with special needs trusts, guardianships, and maybe you aren't even sure what you need yet, and we can help with that too. Book a free call today. You can either use our link in the show notes, or you can go to www.specialneeds-law.com. See you soon. So I am so excited and pleased to offer this interview to you today. I hope that you enjoy hearing about her story, and I hope that you love her book as much as I did. Thank you. And here we go. So I am really excited to have Raja Marhaba with me today, and we are going to talk about a subject near and dear to my heart, but honestly, it really brings back a lot of bad memories for me, and it is all about the triggering, if I can use that word, I know it's overused, but the triggering memories of the IEP process. And we're going to talk to her about her book, Unstoppable, and about the process that she went through in her own family. But there's going to be so many heads nodding that as they're listening to this podcast episode, because so many of us have this David and Goliath experience. Welcome to the show, Raja. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing not only your experience, but your expertise. Thank you. Welcome.
I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you for having me on your show.
So let's just talk about, you know, how you started on this journey. Just tell me just a little bit about your family and, you know, what started this disability, you know, process with you. Tell us a little bit about your background.
My journey started 26 years ago now. I have a 31 and a 33-year-old. When I started, Jonathan was, honestly, he was 2 years old, but my special education journey didn't start until kindergarten, pre-K kindergarten. Lots of issues going on with school. He was very hyper, couldn't learn the alphabets. Pre-K, K, first grade, was retained the second time in first grade again. And he just was not reading, did not want to read, could not learn. And that's when it all started. I had no idea what special education is, what ADHD is, dyslexia. I was a novice mom 26 years ago. There was no resources there. Schools did not allow parents to know other parents who have children with special needs. There was no Google. There was no search engine. Right. I didn't know there was attorneys. There was no attorneys, as far as I knew, no advocates, because I was a very new thing for me, a very new path that I was embarking upon. And then in the first grade, a teacher called me in and said, your son can't read. And I didn't understand why he couldn't read, because he was already retained in the first grade and they should be working on him. And that's actually when the journey started, when he was that young. And by then I ended up getting services from, I called procedural safeguards, and I didn't know program specialist had authority to make decisions. And, you know, slowly, slowly, by asking people, I was able to get connections. And I had called, I think it was Sacramento one day, and I talked to a program specialist, because I was just so frustrated. I'm going to these IEPs. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm at the mercy of the school system. Whatever the teachers wanted, I did. Anything they stated, whatever it was, they said, jump, you know, as far as you can to the sky and come back for your son. Hey, I did it for the school because I believed in them.
They were the experts, right?
Yeah, what do I know? I don't know ADHD. I don't know dyslexia. I don't know coexisting conditions. Who knew? And when we went into the IEP, before the IEP, actually, I called procedural safeguards, and they told me, I told them that Jonathan stopped reading. And they had to turn around the special ed teachers back then. They had a shortage. And the special ed program specialist told me, just, I'll give you, I think it was, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was 2 hours a week of educational therapy for about a year for Jonathan to help help him with his reading ability. And then that very next day was the IEP, and I went into the meeting and I just stayed quiet. I let the team say whatever they wanted to say. And they said, oh, you know, we're going to give you 1 hour a week for 6 months or something like this. And I just was appalled. I says, no, it was 2 hours a week for 6 months. And I told them that they're wrong. And I told them my conversation with a program specialist. And I told the principal, actually was in the room, and she excused herself, went outside to make a phone call, and came back. And she said, my apologies. We're going to give you the whole year, two days a week for Jonathan for educational therapy. And that's when it really started. I realized that it's very political. It's budget oriented. It's budget driven. There are many teachers that love and care the children and want to do the right thing. You have people, the upper ups, like the principals, administrators, the district people. They may want to do the right thing, but budget takes a big role into this. And so sometimes they don't do the right thing because it's a matter of money, not a matter of the child. And that was the beginning of me starting to understand how this, I call it the national broken special education system, because it's nationally broken. I learned through the whole process. I ended up hiring advocates that I finally knew there was advocates when I went into the educational therapy place that gave Jonathan help. There was a lady named Yafa. She's in the book, actually, and she's awesome. She told me that I'm going to boost confidence into your son. And she did. And she gave him Lindenwood Bell and Orton Gillingham. And this kid was changing. And it was a psychological organization. They did a little bit of every type of therapy there. And the psychologist called me into her office one day. I mean, we ended up suing LAUSD, went to Ninth Circuit Federal Court. It should have never, ever, ever gotten that high. I had a 7-digit lawsuit over my head, middle-class family, marriage broken. My ex-husband, we're divorced now. hated the attorneys. We argued all the time for money. I was just this mom that wanted to do everything possible to save my children. And my husband did not understand the whole thing, nor honestly did I understand it. And I didn't understand him as a man, what he was going through, because I'm Middle Eastern and the man is supposed to provide, right? And we're supposed to take care of the family. The man brings the money and the wives and the mothers take care of the family. And he was bringing the money and I was telling him we need more money. And when you get married, you only know what your money is for your family component and you start creating it and you have children, but life throws you a curveball. Now you have a special education child. And well, we didn't have enough money for $5,000 psychoeducational assessments, $3,000 speech and language assessments, $2,000 assistive technology assessments, and so on and so forth for one child. Right? Families have more than one child with special needs. And then I ended up hiring attorneys. I went to 2-3 different attorneys. Let me tell you, not every attorney has the child's best agenda at hand. Children, right, in my opinion, had become commodities for the industry, if you will. There are a lot of individuals that truly, truly love the children and want to do the right thing. And then there are a lot of individuals, it's just a business like any other business. And I get it. I get it. You know, that's your bread and butter. You have to charge a fee to help a family. But what happened to my family was the third attorney that I finally got to, and one of the first attorneys I had, ended up growing her business to about 180 families. And my kids' case were put on hold for about 2 years, which was an injustice. And because of that, the lawsuit took 8 years because I couldn't find the right attorney. And statutes back then, I think, was 3 years. It's 2 years now. It just prolonged and added on. And the money, I still had to dish out money. I had to give therapy to my children out of pocket because they needed help. My ex-husband was still angry with me and angry with everything, but I was so deep knee into this whole thing, I couldn't get out. I found a third attorney and his agenda was to be the number one special education attorney on a federal level. And it was important to take the case to the Ninth Circuit Federal Court to have case precedent set, and would name him as that, my opinion. And because Omar Jr., my other son, Omar Jr., we found out there was something going on with him in the fourth grade because he was introverted. He was ADD, ADHD combined type. So he wasn't, Jonathan was more out there. Omar was more, he kept to himself. Mm-hmm. He was having problems in reading comprehension. And the teacher said, we need to have an IEP. We actually had an IEP for about a year. And I was a very novice mom. I wish I knew then what I know now. Mm. A year later, the school called me into a meeting and said, oh, he's cured. He doesn't need an IEP anymore. He's fine. We need to exit him. And I was like, oh, wow, this is really awesome. He doesn't have disabilities anymore. Any parent's dream, right? With our kids. And then the next year in school, when he transitioned into middle school, this was finishing, I think he got the IEP in the fourth grade and exited in the fifth grade. In the sixth grade, we went to middle school with a 504 plan. And oh my God, if parents, if you think the 504 plan is so easy and for that, you know, you just do it and the teachers take care of it, well, you got to know that ain't the way it works.
Right.
The mom becomes the controller of the 504 plan. The mom becomes the implementator of the 504 plan. The mom has to make a copy for every teacher in every grade level from sixth grade forward at the 504 plan through high school, because teachers either don't have it, never got it, don't believe in it, don't believe in ADHD, don't believe there's a learning disability. And a lot of these children get stigmatized for being happy-go-lucky clown, the social butterfly. This is what Omar, those were all names, my son Omar, was addressed by the school, by the teachers. And I ended up making copies and I ended up going to each and the notebook and to write into it. They say, oh, well, have your son go to the teacher after class every day. You got five different classes. And have him tell the teacher to write a comment so that we can have better communication between the parent and the school. Well, that didn't happen. You have ADHD, executive functioning deficits, and doesn't to the next classroom. It never happens. And so they don't put, they put the onus and the burden on the parent. They don't put, and on the child.
And on the child, yeah.
They don't take the initiative to do something. However, in the sixth grade, there was one teacher, her name was Aviva Ebner, and till today we're very close, love her to death. She was almost saving grace. She is the only teacher he loves and respects through his whole schooling. Only teacher. Wow. That's how much of an impact she made on him. So when I say there's some good and bad out there, there are. And, you know, I wish that teachers would teach all of them, not just that the handful that really do it from their heart, do it because of the love of the children. And this is what they want and not for the benefits that come along. Mm-hmm. Right. Because you got summers off, you have the pension plan. And I get they're not the highest paid. And I get that they work very hard. And a lot of them put out of pocket money to give the children what they need in the classroom. And I appreciate that. And I thank all the teachers for that. I just wish there was more Aviva Ebners out this in the world. I mean, Omar had a computer class and he was 11 years old and he wasn't doing well. And the teacher told me in the computer class, you have to come into class and sit with your son and teach him every day because I don't have the time for him. It's like, what? Who's the teacher here?
What?
And I don't know anything about computers. And my son loves computers. And he just, the teacher, all she did, and I swear to you, I sat in the chair next to my son in the classroom. And I did it for a couple of days. And then I said, I got to work. I can't do this. You're getting paid to do this. She just sat in her desk and gave the instructions. And the kids were to do whatever the instructions were. So if you're an okay child that had no disabilities or invisible disabilities, but you had high comprehension and you knew exactly how to navigate your curriculum, then you were fine. Yeah. But if you're a child that had challenges in vocabulary and reading and writing and following directions, well, you're not fine. That's not the way to teach. And I ended up going to the principal and I complained about her. And then I would get a message on my cell phone, my message machine at home back then for Omar. And the teacher would say, you know, Mrs. Marhaba, your child is nothing but an animal. He's an animal.
Oh,
he's an animal.
And how dare they say things like that about our kids? I have so many stories like that. So many stories.
It was horrible. And the next day I went to the principal and I took the tape with me with my little recorder. And I said to the principal, I want you to hear something. And I let him listen to the teacher speak. And I says, well, if your teacher is referring to my son as an animal, that means I am an animal because I raised my son to be an animal. And I'm highly appalled by this message. I says, is this how you train your teachers to talk to parents when there's a conflict in the school with the children? And he said, no. I says, well, this is what your teacher did. He says, can I have the tape recorder? I said, no. I go, I'm going to see you in court. I'm suing you. That was the beginning of Omar Jr.'s lawsuit, which ended up in Ninth Circuit Federal Court for an eligibility case. From a 504 to an IEP.
So this is what I want to talk about, your courage. You know, I want to talk about your courage and your David and Goliath type of case. So before we pressed the record button, I told you that your book, Unstoppable, and your writing style. And by the way, audience, her book is not just a story about her life, which in and of itself is enough, and it's a great story, but it's also filled with tools and resources for you. So it's a guide as well. So you'll want to, you know, read it for her fearless advocacy and her story, but also because it's, you know, it's filled with some great resounding support for you as well. You know, as the audience, we get so much more than just a good story. So it reminded me so much of Malcolm Gladwell's book, David and Goliath. So if you haven't read that, it's a book chock full of David and Goliath stories of what he calls underdogs, misfits, and the art of battling giants, which I just love. So your story is just like that. And the the description of her book is, knowledge is power, especially when it comes to disseminating information to families in such desperate need. Parents are the biggest advocates for their children. And through her foundation, Ms. Marhaba, through her own personal journey with her son, gained an incredible amount of knowledge, courage, and drive to carry out this level of support by extending it to other families. Raja has touched so many families through her work and has had a profound impact in altering the course of many of these young people's lives, many of whom who were at risk for giving up on their hopes and dreams because they were not receiving the support and services they needed. For many years, Raja has provided pro bono services to America's sex trafficking victims through Children of the Night. She is fearless, and in her advocacy and commands respect and action from members of the educational community who have routinely denied services to this vulnerable population. That was not the paragraph I wanted to read. I'm sorry. I wanted to read about the book. Ah, I'm so sorry. I pulled the wrong paragraph. But the paragraph about the book that I wanted to read was where you were, the district took you as a middle-class mom to Ninth Circuit Federal Court to intimidate you and drain all of your resources so that you would give up, which they have done to so many families that I know. And although you were exhausted and, you know, you were just an average middle-class mom and you were divorced, your marriage was either ending or had ended already at that time, you were committed to providing FAPE, which is a free and appropriate education, to your son. And it was his right. And you were going to stand by that right. And this book was all about your story and, you know, standing up for his rights. And I just love it. So
I had no idea, honestly, what I was doing when I was doing it back then. I did not know what advocacy meant. All I knew is I saw red. And I'm a fighter. I have a lot of fight in me. I had a really rough childhood growing up. I have a lot of fight in me. And I'm going to fight for what's right, bottom line. Whatever it costs, I'm going to fight for what's right. I'm not going to just sit there and let something happen when I know deep in my heart and soul that this is wrong. And it was wrong what the school was doing to me. And we didn't divorce. Actually, I finalized a divorce with my ex-husband in 2022 because we owned a construction business together. And we had a 5-year contract that we needed to finish before we finalized the divorce because we were married in the business and married personally. Back then, I didn't divorce, but my God, we were not on the same page. There was no marriage. All I did was fight for the kids, meet with the attorneys, do my wifely, motherly business things, whatever was my task for the day. But I didn't have a relationship with my husband. I worked, I raised, I advocated, I actually was tape recording every IEP, transcribing it. And let me tell you, I didn't have a transcription set up back then. I had a tape recorder. And I would tape all the IEPs and then go home for 2 days. I would listen to the tape and type, which was not conducive, but I did it. 50, 60, 70 pages worth of IEP notes. Not knowing that became part of the evidence package for the attorneys. All the transcriptions were sent to the attorneys.
Wow.
So I was becoming a paralegal without realizing that that's what I was doing. I was not trained to do this. I graduated Birmingham Community College. I have a 2-year associate's degree in word processing and business management because back then word processing was the Google of today. It was computers, right? And I ended up getting scouted to work for GE under the supervision of Jack Welch's team. I was part of his team. And when I got married and came out to California, that's all I knew. I wasn't primed for a paralegal work. I wasn't primed to deal with special education, kids, or marriage. Mm-hmm. There is no book that tells us, hey, when you get married, here's what happens, right? And then here's the to-dos, right? Here's the tools that you need to get through the marriage life, children life, special ed life, and whatever else comes your way, right? Because it's not a perfect world. The key is to keep it together. And back then, when I was fighting so hard for my children, I forgot my husband. And, you know, I was angry with him for not being the man I needed him to be as a husband, but he was being a provider. And whenever I said, give me $20,000, $30,000, we need to pay for school, everything was out of pocket. That's how it tallied, it added up. And the attorneys cost a lot of money, retainer fees. And this went on for years between three different attorneys. And so then I didn't take into account, maybe my husband has feelings, right? Because usually the mom, maybe I want to bring awareness to the family component, because right now I advocate very hard for families to stay united as a unit versus mother and father against each other, or two people in a marriage against each other. Because that's what happened to my life. My life was broken because all I saw was red. I'm going to do whatever I wanted to do for my kids to help them. And I forgot my husband. And I think the significant other, male or woman, whoever is fiercely fighting for the child, is the forgotten one. They bring home the bacon. We forgot that we take their money to pay the bills. We take the money to hire the attorney. We take the money to get the assessments. And we don't have time for them because we're so overwhelmed with raising the children, dealing with the diagnosis, dealing with the therapies and running and working and cooking, mm-hmm. and the laundry and the housework. It's overwhelming for one parent, be a man or a woman, whoever plays that role, right? And then there's the other parent that brings home the money. That parent is the forgotten one because that parent is focused on working hard. And then I didn't think about it until these days, believe it or not, when I reflect back on my life. I go, all these years, I just took money from my husband and he never said no. He was angry, but he always gave me the money to fight for these children, for his children. And hindsight, had I been more aware and cognitive of my husband and what he was doing and not so focused and overwhelmed with my inner feelings, my emotions, my anger, my children, maybe there would have been a chance for the marriage. I don't know. And then I thought about what was my ex-husband going through at the time psychologically, right? Works hard to bring home the money. And that's all they do. They become a workhorse. They work home to bring home the money. And then we need more money, go back and work harder and bring home more money. And then it becomes a bottleneck. You know, you get stuck. You don't have any more money to bring home. And then that's where all the problems start. And so I guess my message is, I think it's really important for both parents in the family to be cognitive of each other's psychological, emotional weakness and or strength, because they're going through the same process. I thought I was going through the whole process by myself, and I was, but I wasn't in a way, because I still took the money to pay, right? If I didn't have the money, where am I going to get the money to pay for all these resources?
Raja, that's so sad, you know, sad to hear all of that. And I want to be a solutions girl and say, is there another way to go about this? So first of all, I want to say that I find many school districts and state agencies will exploit two parents who are not on the same page. They will very often put a wedge even further between two people when they see that. I don't know if that happened to you. I certainly know that happened to me. I got divorced very early on in, you know, my family's raising of the kids, and we were not on the same page, and found it hard to co-parent. And I very often found the, you know, agency people in our life to be very manipulative and divisive at times. And I see that a lot in my work. So I don't know if you experienced that, but I'm sure many people out there in our audience have experienced it at one point or another.
when I advocated for my kids, my ex-husband never went to an IEP meeting until many years later, when the money was really piling up. I was getting $350,000, $400,000 invoices from an attorney. You're an attorney, and I'm sure retainers that I know of is anywhere from $2,500 to $5,000 to take a case. That was not what happened to me. And until the bills were hitting home and I told the attorney, I don't have this money to pay you. And just the hope was we were going to win. So the school district pays on the back end because it was a full-blown hearing. Mm-hmm. Well, all I had was my faith and my husband. I was losing him. Like, what man, imagine you going to your husband at that time and giving him a $350,000, $400,000 bill, education, legal fees. Hey, honey. We don't even make that money here. Yeah. It was devastating. And I fought the school couldn't play him on me because it was only me in the meeting. He didn't mm-hmm. want to go to the meetings. He was so tired of it all. My experience advocating for families throughout the years has been, sometimes the school does that. They try to talk to the parents and make it look beautiful, whatever they're offering. And I know it's not beautiful. I know more can be done. And then they would have the parents, if they're on the same page, the parents, it would be fine. If the parents aren't on the same page and the school district has an advantage over them. So it really depends on that family situation and what's going on with their children.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So then most families would have a hard time coming up with that kind of money, even the very hardest workers, you know, even people who would sell everything to do this for their kids. So, you know, what are the alternatives? What do you do in those situations?
I was blessed that I owned a house that I could sell and get whatever out of it to keep paying. I know a lot of families don't have a house that they can, but we ended up changing our entire lifestyle. We went from a middle class home to a low income home. We were by a train station, which we weren't prior to that. We were in a 2-bedroom apartment with a small backyard. We were in a middle upper class neighborhood, 4 or 5 bedrooms, I mean, big backyard. All that had to go away. That, you know, we were working hard to build ourselves for our children and give them the foundation that they need to take what my husband and I put together so that they can take it to the next level in their lifetime when we're gone. Mm-hmm. All that diminished, all that American dream was gone. And we ended up downsizing our lifestyle. We ended up downsizing our business because so much money came out of the business to feed us. We were just, whatever the business would give us, we would pour into the fighting, and whatever we got from the equity from the house went to the attorneys. And so everything was on, like, everything stopped. Mm-hmm. And when we finally went through this entire process, the only thing that kept me alive was my faith. I'm Roman Catholic and I'm very close to my faith. I go to church every Sunday. And one day I went to church and I went to the tabernacle, went down on my knees because I was so broken. I cried and prayed to God and told him to take my soul. I don't want to live no more. Sorry. I couldn't take it anymore.
Yeah.
The fight in me, I was losing the fight, and everything we worked hard to build was crashing down. My mm-hmm. marriage was failing. My kids were on hold because nothing happens until you have a settlement, right? So the kids are on hold and you're still dishing money out of your pocket to sustain the children's education or therapies until you get through the whole process. I had no idea that this is what hearing is, right? Lawyers, now I understand that mediation settlement agreements, I've gone to a whole bunch of them. I've gone to hearings. I've actually did seat advocacy and was mentored by Henry Tavmasian, an incredible attorney in California. Love him to death. I was lucky enough to, God put the right people in my spot, in my path to help me get to wherever he thinks I need to go. That's mm-hmm. my faith. And when I went to church and broke down and just made a pact, you know, take my soul, just get my kids out of this situation, take my soul, save my marriage. I can't do this anymore. This is the most I can offer God was my soul. Well, we got through the whole process. We prevailed in the end at a very high cost, barely saved the marriage. There was a lot of hurt moving forward because of the lawsuits with the marriage itself. And I ended up forming a nonprofit. I've advocated for over 300 families pro bono. I had a hard time taking money from families because the school district took my money to give the same services for my children to these families. And I had the hardest time getting money. And then finally, we decided to create an assessment scholarship program with a nonprofit where we pay the $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 for assessments that families don't have the money to pay for. We work very hard to raise money for the foundation specifically for this program, because without proper assessments, the IEPs are going to be wrong, right? Because assessments drive IEPs. And then when all this was said and done, you know, I'm still here. So I guess God's not done with me yet.
Yeah.
And recently I went and I saw the film Sound of Freedom. And yeah. That film, it got to me because there was one point where Tim asks a gentleman that was buying children to free them. He was actually saving them. He was buying them from the predators to give them life. He wasn't buying them for any other reason. And his answer was, when God tells you what to do, you do not hesitate. And man, did that hit home with me. Mm-hmm. Because I did not sign up for any of this. I was corporate finance, graduated college, went into corporate, got married, still did corporate, ended up working in my husband's construction business because at one point in our life, he had a life-threatening accident. He almost died in the business. And the snowball just kept on coming. It never ended. And so I think it's just, I have a lot of fight in me. How much more fight I have in me, I don't know. But I'm just going to keep fighting until I can't fight anymore.
Well, and the incredible thing is that you've taken all of this hard-won knowledge and skill, and now you're just giving it to other people. So instead of becoming a paralegal or, you know, turning it into becoming a paid advocate, you've created this foundation. You have been advocating for other people, but you're doing it in a way that provides them with something that they don't have to mortgage their houses for. They don't have to completely financially devastate their families for. You are supporting the community in a way that you didn't have. You're giving them something that you couldn't find, that you needed. It's beautiful.
I appreciate that. That's my mission, but just with one minor correction. When I went through seed advocacy and Henry mentored me, Henry Tomasian, he actually told me to go become an attorney because of my knowledge base, but my knowledge base was hard knocks, hands-on, personal knowledge base more than school book knowledge base. And it was a lot because I had gone through a lot. And I said to him, no, I don't want to be an attorney because I know what attorneys go through. And I don't want that stress. Like, I have a lot of respect for attorneys because it's a lot of work. And I didn't want to do that. He goes, go to UCLA and become a paralegal. I did. I became a paralegal. And with that, I still didn't charge. And I ended up doing more work with attorneys and working for families. And I still did the families pro bono. And if it went to due process, then the attorneys would take care of me on that level. And then I ended up starting a for-profit in Arizona, actually. I have two homes, a home in California and a home in Arizona. When we closed the construction company, I didn't have income anymore. So I couldn't live the life I used to live. Oh. And relocating to Arizona was more financially feasible for me. And my sons live in California and I visit them every other month. I have families there, a stronghold there in California. All the fundraisers continue to be in California. It just gives me a more reasonable financial lifestyle in Arizona because California is so expensive to live mm-hmm. in. I don't have the income I used to have. And I started Unstoppable Advocacy, a corporation for middle and upper class families that don't qualify under the nonprofit structure, if you will, and mm-hmm. I would help them. And my main thing is not to go to due process. Let me help you get as much services as you can possibly get your children from the school district until the school district pushes back when we've exhausted all remedies and I've tried everything I can to help get services for the children. At that point in time, the families can take whatever I've worked on to an attorney, and because I set everything up for lawsuit anyway, right? Because I don't know what the school is going to do or not do. In my mind, everything is paper trail. I ask all the right questions and I document everything and I give it to the parents and I says go. And if they hire an attorney, then I will give the attorney my summary, my whatever my work is. And the attorney either has his or her paralegal take it over from there, or if the parents want me to stay on, then I stay on the case. And then that's the end of that. It's not important for me to stay on a case and make money on the family longevity. Mm-mm. It's more important for me to get the family to where they want to go. And if they don't need me anymore, I'm okay with that. There's another family that's going to need me and they can move on. But historically, most of the families stay with me until the kids graduate high school and sometimes even in college, because then we help place them with the DSPS office in the college level. So it's been, I have the nonprofit. I've been doing this since 2001 and life changed again for me. And I've learned how to, one man told me, I'm also a licensed realtor. And my broker at the time said to me, Raja, you have to learn how to duck. He was into punching, like boxing. And he goes, you have to learn when to duck so that you can miss the punch when the other person throws the punch. Yeah. And I think that's what I've been doing. I learned when to step up and deal with it. And I've learned when to duck and let them miss me. At the end of all this and the lawsuits, I actually asked to meet with one of the representatives of the school districts that was in hearing with me. And I said to her, can we have an off the record conversation? We met at Starbucks. And I said to her, I have one question. She says, what is that? I said, why did you take a middle-class family to Ninth Circuit Federal Court? I didn't have the money. Why did you destroy my family? And she said, because you would not go away. She goes, Raja, 1% of families nationwide fight the fight you fought. The others, they see, they hear due process lawsuit, they drop it. They don't want to go anymore. They get scared. They get intimidated. She goes, you wouldn't go away. The harder you push, the harder we push back. And that like did something to me. I'm like, oh my God, this is horrible. What do all these families do? It's terrible.
Yeah. And when they lost, they had to pay.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if I can get the families the structure where it gives them a stronger case when they do go to an attorney, if they do need to go to an attorney, so be it. If I can get them the services that they need to get what their children is in dire need of, then let's do that. Let's not go to due process. Let's not go to hearing. That's not the agenda. It's, you know, meet the families. C taught me, meet the parents where they are, right? That's what C said. And keep your attitude, check it out at the door. Don't bring it in the room with you. And
when did you start working with sex trafficking victims?
Oh, in 2009, I ended up having a phone call from Lois Lee, who was the founder of Children of the Night. And it was her office that called me and said, we've noticed that our target population, our children that are trafficked, have special needs. And what Children of the Night is, are you familiar with Children of the Night? And then let me give you a little bit of a backstory. Lois Lee founded Children of the Night 44 years ago. What she did was, I guess she was driving around in San Diego one day and saw a boy prostituting himself for money, picked him up and took him home. Gave him food, clothes, and a roof over his head. And then in conversation with him, found out there's more like him. So she went out, picked up more children on the streets and took them home and took care of them. And she kind of started fighting this fight for these children when she, like me, didn't know, right? We learn as we go when we have this burning passion inside us to do the right thing. And she did. And eventually she created a facility in Van Nuys, California, where she would house, I think it was 22 children. They would come from all over the country, any state. They would call her up and she would house them. She would give them room and board, education, psychologist, psychiatrist, medication, haircut, nails, whatever, making these children feel whole again and that they're worth something. That's yeah. what she gave them, because she wanted them off the streets. Whatever it took to keep them off the streets, Lois Lee did. And then I'd get this phone call and saying, we learned that these children have special needs. And we've called a whole bunch of advocates, but they want to charge us $100 and $150 an hour, and we don't have the money to pay it. And I was like, wow. After what I just went through, this was in 2009 when they called me. And I said, I have two boys living with a roof over their head. They have clothing. They have food. They're not sexually exploited. They're good boys. They're safe. How could you say no? I told her, sure, I will do it pro bono. And we started the relationship from there. I went to the facility. I met the children. She used to have once a year thank you dinners for all the volunteers, and all the children would be there, and they're anywhere from 10 to 17 years old, trafficked children, prostituted. I saw them, met them, sat with them, spoke with them. They're kids. They yeah. want mom and dad to love them. They want better for them. But at the same time, they have this darkness. They talk about their pimps and the guns to their head and the drugs, and they had to have sex. And they wouldn't get love from the pimps if they didn't do what the pimps told them to do. I heard this firsthand from these kids. And then I was just like, it made me want to help more, because my kids did not, that were not, and thank God, will never ever be exposed to any of that. And so I started to help them. I went to the school districts, did IEPs with them, got assessments with them, fought for them. And she ended up, I think right before COVID hit, the FBI went and shut her facility down in Van Nuys because they wanted the children to go to prison and testify against the pimps. And in order to do that, they had to be under FBI supervision. They took him from her facility. And then she ended up, she got angry. I remember it was really hard for her. And she said, Raja, I'm going to come back. We're going to do this bigger and better. And I said to her, whatever you want, Lois, I'm here for you, whatever you want. Because I believe in what she's doing. I believe in saving the kids. And I personally met these children and experienced them. And so then she, 5 years later, ends up having a global, worldwide school tutoring for individuals that were trafficked, no matter what age, no matter where they are, no matter what country or state they're in. And she has tutors that give them education to get a GED, get them graduating from high school to college to career, to rehab them, to get them off the streets, and to have them have a better life. And she says to me, you're going to be my special education expert. And she flies me actually to different states, and I meet children in prison that are trafficked and try to help them get the educational piece of it while she provides the psychiatric, psychological, lockdown facility, whatever it is that the child needs, if we're able to rehab them. They're, you know, I wish it was 100% success stories, but these kids have been traumatized. And you do the best you can, but you cannot stop. You just got to keep on going. And when I saw the sound of freedom, oh my God, I could connect in so many ways, because I know these children. I was with them, and I'm part of this organization, and I absolutely love what Lois Lee does for Children of the Night. And she saved over 11,000 children in 44 years.
Amazing. Well, and you're amazing. And I'm so, so glad that you had time and could come on the podcast today. Thank you so much for sharing your incredible story, and really for being so motivating to talk to today, and for providing a great platform for families, for making us feel not so alone in all of our own David and Goliath stories, because we all come up against this in so many ways in our lives. And, you know, sometimes it's just so hard, and we all get to those moments in life like you did in that church where we're not sure if we can go another minute. And somehow we just find that we can, and we just have to. And, you know, it's so, so good to be able to read your story, Unstoppable, and to be able to know that we're not alone in these journeys that we have. And again, we're just grateful for you for sharing with us today. Do you have any last words of wisdom, any last pieces of advice to share with the audience today?
Yeah, to never give up, no matter how dim and grim your situation is, never give up. And stay as united as you can with your family, because that family component is so important.
Thank you for that. Thank you for being so honest and so raw with us today. It's hard to do that. And yeah, and so sorry for all that you've been through, but so glad that you've come out the other side stronger and more feistier than ever. And thanks for taking all of this trauma and sharing it with the world, you know, because if it weren't for people like you, we would not have the amazing advocacy that we have today. And I'm so, so glad that you won the COPA Diane Lipton Award. I'm really excited for you. I'm so glad that happens. That was 2021, right?
Yeah, it was so funny. I called Henry Tomasi and I says, guess what? I won COPA. He goes, well, it took him so long.
Well, it's well deserved. That's a huge honor. And I'm so excited for you. So congrats. And thank you again for being on the show. Everybody, you need to pick up that book. It's great. We will have all of your contact information in the show notes so that people can connect with you and can pick up your book and make sure that if they have any questions for you, or if they want to just check out some of the places that they can meet up with you, it'll all be there. So thank you so much.
I appreciate your efforts and time, and for everything you're doing to bring awareness to these families. Thank you.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I just wanted to take a second to say how much I appreciate you taking the time to listen to these podcasts. I'm having a blast doing them, and I hope that you're finding the content to be what you were really hoping. If you are, please take a second to leave a rating and a review. It's so helpful in getting this content out to people who really need to hear it. Thank you so much.